Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. If you've been listening to the show, you've heard me talk about the changing world of public relations. In my opinion, what worked in the past just doesn't work anymore. Is a press release important? Yeah, but it may not be the main way to get your story in the hands of the editors, whether it's newspapers, magazines, TV, etc., etc. And who better to know than a managing editor, best-selling author, and public relations expert? Joining me at the cafe today is Justin Breen, CEO and founder of Brepik Communications out of Chicago. So stay tuned. Let me take a quick break and we'll begin our conversation with Justin.
A chief marketing officer has both the power and the responsibility to drive long-term strategic growth that can ultimately lead to organizational prosperity. And that growth starts with a vision. What is your firm's definition of success? Growth? How will you strategically work towards expansion, for example? Equally important, what is your customer's perception of your firm? And how well do you meet a need or deliver value? When you begin to align your vision with that of your customer, you build a stronger, lasting relationship with them. You see the whole picture, realizing the lifetime value of that customer, as well as the lifetime value you provide. A CMO must look at success with a strategic mindset, looking beyond the transactional. The CMO must understand the customer journey, utilizing the competitive intelligence, embracing and leveraging your unique market insights. If your business is ready for growth and you need a CMO, but you're not quite ready for a full-time person yet, I'd welcome the opportunity to explore the benefits of using a fractional CMO.
Visit theponzigroup.com to learn more.
As I mentioned, I'm joined by Justin Breen, CEO and founder of Brepik Communications. Justin, welcome.
Angelo, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. It's a lovely day. I can see while the audience can't see the pictures, we can see it and you're in Chicago area and it looks like a beautiful day there.
You will hear a lot of birds during this broadcast for sure.
I like that. So audience, know that I'm not piping in bird sounds throughout this this presentation today, but I do like it. I do like it. It's fun. So before we get started, why don't you take a few minutes and tell the audience about yourself and your business?
Sure. So I was a journalist for 20 years, created my entire business model based on how PR firms annoyed me for 20 years. So most PR firms send out useless press releases. And as a journalist, you get hundreds of these a day from people you don't know. So my firm, which is called Brepik, creates newsworthy stories that are interesting, inspirational, that kind of thing. It becomes links on the client's website under news or blog, so it would look like a link that you would see in the LA Times or the Chicago Tribune or the New York Times. And then I take that link and pitch it to media locally, regionally, nationally, and internationally. And if media is interested, I put them in touch with the client contact moving forward. So it's been a very simple, streamlined process. I only work with visionaries who look at things as investments, not costs. So if someone's like, what do you cost or what do you charge? It's an automatic disqualifier. And what that's led to is this global incubator of geniuses who were constantly introducing each other for mutual gain. And the byproduct is I'm constantly getting intros to companies and businesses and amazing people around the world that want to hire my firm.
That's great. Well, I like the fact, I mean, you mentioned visionaries, but to me, when you're talking about if someone's really concerned with price, I look at value. As soon as someone starts talking about, you know, what's your hourly?
Hourly.
And yeah, it's like, come on, you know, what's
really?
The value? Yeah, it's, you know, years ago when I was in the advertising business, I remember we were sitting around at lunch with a client and we started brainstorming. And in like 15 minutes, we came up with this idea for a new ad campaign.
Okay.
So then we billed the client, it was, I don't know, $25,000, $30,000. And he went ballistic because he said, hey, we did this in 15 minutes. So it wasn't the 15 minutes, it was the 30 years of experiences and value that you got to get us to that point in 15 minutes, not the other way around. So I always find that really interesting when clients and prospects, whoever, get it confused about the value versus, you know, the dollar sign.
So the reason I'm so direct with how I talk and how I communicate what my company does and what my company is because I am very intentional about weeding out those type of people that I do not want to work with. And frankly, that's most people, because most people have a cost scarcity mindset, especially now. But the visionaries in my network on a global level do not have that. They have an investment abundance mindset. And so those are the only people I like working with, because not only are they great clients and just great, happy people in general, but usually the people in their networks feel the same way. So, like, again, that's what my company is on a much higher level thinking. It's just this giant incubator of amazing people everywhere. And we're just, like I said, constantly introducing each other for mutual gain. So companies like mine and the people in my network, they're not affected by COVID at all. And if they are, they're just pivoting and investing heavily right now. So, again, there's two ways of looking at life. Most people cost adversity. And that's fine. It's just I don't look at life like that. It's always investment in abundance. And then that just attracts other people like that.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's I've been talking to other people as, you know, COVID happened. And certainly what I see, and I'm sure you have seen, maybe not in this business and other businesses, that marketing tends to be seen as an expense item and gets chopped pretty quick as a way to put money at the bottom line. And unfortunately, I like to look at it, to your point, as an investment in their future and their future success. And when you only see it as a expense item, then, you know, that becomes very difficult. And one of the beauties of doing what we do is we can decide not to work with those people.
Oh yeah.
And that's been great. I remember the first time, and it was probably only about 12 years ago, that we actually fired a really, really, really good client, but they were just horrible to work with and they were penny pinchers. And it was, got to the point where my staff was going crazy. And so we made this conscious decision to let him go. And I mean, it was a huge monthly fee, but it was destroying the agency. And so we were much better for it by not having them on the roster.
Yeah. And again, there's ways of looking at life. So like I'm the oddball outlier entrepreneur that like revenue to me, it doesn't really mean anything. Like my company makes plenty of money. And once you get to a certain point, it's like, really, how much money do you need to make? It's more of like my 10xing is 10xing my network on a global level, because that creates endless opportunities for my network and for myself. And then 10xing experience in life. So like doing things with my wife and my kids doing, I mean, that's what having money does allow you to do. It allows you to do some fun, cool activities, you know. But other than that, like, I think people are starting to realize that money really isn't that important, as long as you have enough to live on and be somewhat relatively, you know, relaxed in that standpoint. But like after a while, it just becomes money. So again, most entrepreneurs I know, they're definitely focused on building revenue, and I understand and appreciate that. It's just that's not my goal in life.
So before we get started and dig into kind of your journey and what's going on, I ask a few questions of all my guests. So the first one, I mean, you started this business in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So as you've been growing this business, what keeps you up at night?
Yeah, I get this question all the time. And most people are like, really, that's your answer? I go, well, nothing keeps me up at night, because my business is super successful. I only work with the people I want to work with. I see my wife and children as much as I want to. And so that's what I mean. Like, I've created an entire business that I do what I like to do and what I'm good at. I only work with the people I want to work with. I make as much money as I want to. And so, I mean, it's nothing keeps me up at night. I have no complaints at all. So again, once you stop chasing money and focus on things that to me are the most important, then none of this other stuff really matters. So, and business continues to grow because my network on a global level continues to grow, and I keep meeting these visionary abundance mindset people. And so most of my day is just talking to people all across the world who think the same way I do. So for me, that's endlessly exciting and intoxicating. And again, I only do what I like to do and what I'm good at. So it's not work. It's just fun.
What's the best business advice you've ever given and or received?
Yeah, so the book I just wrote, which is an international bestseller in 6 countries and number 1 for entrepreneurs in the U.S., it details 30 of those type of lessons that I learned from some of the top entrepreneurs in the world in my company's first 30 months of business. And each of those 30 lessons is a chapter. The very best thing that I've learned is that do what you love to do and what you're good at. The best entrepreneurs I know basically do one thing at a super high level, and they just keep doubling down on it and raising rates. And that's what I've done within my own business. I'm very focused on my core process and enhancing and continuing to double down on it. And that's why it's been successful, is because if someone doesn't want to do what I do, that's fine. I'll just refer them out to somebody else. But I focus on what I'm really good at and essentially better than anyone else in the world at, and then what I really like to do.
Okay. What's the best compliment you ever got?
Yeah, that's a good question. So because I probably make 10, minimum 10 life-changing intros a day. So again, I can talk to somebody in Australia and they'll say something totally random, and I'll be like, oh, I know someone in California that thinks the exact same way. And then a week later, I'll get an email from them saying, I don't know how you made that intro, but this person's my new best friend. So thank you so much. So I get one of those thank you emails once a day, and I always really appreciate it, because at PR, that's great, and my company does really well at that. What I really enjoy doing is making these life-changing intros that have nothing to do with my business, yet it has everything to do with my business, because these compliments are sincere and genuine, and I know I, in fact, am changing people's lives by introing to people to other great people who can either help change their business or become friends or, you know, referral type people, and I just know, I don't write anything down. It's just all in my head, and I'm just can connect the dots on a crazy high level.
The now I'm going to come back to the book a little bit later in the conversation, but if your journey as a business owner, and this was a book, mm-hmm. right? Not necessarily your book, but if your journey was, mm-hmm. what would that title be?
It would be the title of my book, which is Epic Business. That's what the whole book is about, my journey. And I spend a lot of time working with some very high level advisors coming up with the title of that, and some of my mentors as well. But the backstory, my job salary got cut in half February 10th, 2017, when I was working as a full-time journalist, just because the job, they've terminated two people that day, and then they cut my salary in half, basically just to keep me employed, because I was doing a good job. So over the next couple of weeks, I looked for a full-time job, couldn't find one, because it's a black hole nightmare out there for people looking for jobs. And so I decided to incorporate April 16th, 2017, while I was still working full time. Nobody knew about it. Over the next 6 weeks, I reached out to 5,000 people to get my first five clients. So one in 1,000. I got my fifth client, resigned from my full time job the next day. And then a couple days later, Robert Feeder, who's the top media columnist in the Midwest, did a story that I'd started my own firm. So that's what my book's about. Like, I didn't know what a W-9 was before I started a company. I didn't know what an LLC meant, even stood for. And now here I am running this global company that only works with the best people on the planet. So like, this is how I did it. So
did you find that transition difficult?
No, because when I was a journalist for 20 plus years, they were giving me weird jobs because they didn't know what to do with me. So I was an entrepreneur. I was an entrepreneur inside a company. And being a journalist in terms of being ridiculed and getting denied access or getting, trying to talk to 10 people to get one really good quote, that actually prepared me a lot to be an entrepreneur. Because when you're an entrepreneur, if you can't handle like ludicrously high stress and overwhelming failure, things like that, then this is not a life for you. I strongly recommend don't starting your own business. But because as a journalist, like just to get to Chicago, I had to put myself through so much failure and continuing to just head down, keep digging and, grinding away. And that's similar to how it is to start a business, although starting a business is much more stressful and much more highs and lows in the corporate world. But at least I had some type of preparation in terms of how that could feel being a journalist.
Now, you mentioned, you've dealt with a lot of PR firms and saw what, you didn't like and the stuff that they were doing. And I think we mentioned this in a kind of one of our earlier calls is, I mean, the traditional world of public relations, at least from my standpoint, has changed drastically. Mm-hmm. And it really just doesn't work. I've had a recent experience where with a client and the firm, we just did not get any traction, or they did not get any traction like we had hoped with this client. But with your approach, I mean, it really seems to be different. And on your website, you say, we grow your business brand with expert social media postings, crafting click-worthy stories, craved by local, regional, and national media, successful pitching to outlets, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you figure out what the media wants first and craft the story, or are you crafting the story, which I think is the traditional, then going out and pitching? So what's your process?
Yeah. So again, as a journalist, I wrote 2 to 3 stories on deadline every single day. So someone could talk to me for an hour and 55 minutes will be totally useless to what anyone cares about. But in 5 minutes, I'll know what the story is. So, I mean, that's one of my unique abilities. I can talk to someone and find a story out of that. So media just needs 2 things, a good story, which pretty much everybody has. People are constantly telling me things that they've never told anyone else before, just because I just know how to do that. I know how to interview people. So that's one thing, is a good story. And then the other thing is a news peg, meaning why is it a story now? So are you writing a book? Are you running across the United States? Did you start some new company? You know, whatever. Are you speaking at some big event? And that's all media needs. So the reason why my business has always done well, but really exploded in the last 3 months, is because all these visionary wackadoos that look at things in abundance and then as investments, they're just pivoting and investing like crazy right now. And they don't look at things as marketing as a cost. They look at it as an investment. And this is a huge opportunity for them. And that's the way I look at what's going on now as well. This is an incredible opportunity for people to start their businesses or pivot on their businesses or come up with new amazing technology and all that kind of stuff. So I guess to answer your question is, like, I just know what a good story is from doing this my entire life. And then I know what outlets are good fits. And then when clients say, well, I really want to be in this place or whatever, then I just double down on those efforts. So that's how my brain works. And that's why I focus on one thing that I'm really good at.
Do you find there's a difference in pitching domestically versus internationally?
No.
What do you think? What's something people might misunderstand about you or your offering?
I don't think there's anything to be misunderstood. And so that's why I was, that's why I'm so direct. There's a 4-step process. It's on my website. I'm not hiding anything. To your point earlier, I can't tell you how many people have told me they've worked with other firms and have been horribly disappointed, and or they have no idea what that firm does. And I frankly don't know what PR firms, a lot of them do any. Also, I literally have never understood it. So my firm does literally one thing. It only focuses on visionaries and people who look at things as investments. So I'd weed out all the people that wouldn't understand it. I only want to attract the people that get it and understand making this type of investment increases business right away, but also more importantly, increases their validity and credibility short and long term.
How do you market yourself?
So I do it indirectly, meaning I don't sell anything. In fact, most of the conversations I have, we don't even talk about business. Unless somebody asks me what I do, we just talk about life, and I try to mesh people's brains. Like, if someone doesn't mesh with my brain, they go away very quickly. And the way I talk and the way I think, it only attracts these. I mean, it just attracts these amazing people all over the world. So, most of my business comes from this network that just keeps introducing me to all these other great people, and I'm just constantly introducing them to other great people. The other, you know, maybe 10-20% is I've 40,000 followers on social media, including more than 21,000 on LinkedIn. And I use LinkedIn especially as a commercial for other people. Like, my clients are always in mainstream media or whatever. And so I just post, like, thanks Chicago Tribune for picking up the story and tag my client. And then other people are like, oh, wow, this person's getting all this exposure. And then they reach out to me or whatever. So, I mean, I don't sell anything. This is who I am. And if you don't want to work with me, that's fine. But the people that do, they're very high level and they're just awesome. And those are the people I want to work with anyway. So,
yeah, you know, it's interesting. And kind of looking at your site and a little background on you, you also have used your own talents and skills to put yourself in the media. And I think there was, purposeful or just circumstance or
total circumstance. So what you're talking about is, so I had this, ridiculous idea, because I'm an entrepreneur and entrepreneurs come up with ridiculous ideas, but a lot of them make a lot of money off of those. So in 2018, my wife's a doctor, and we met the day before she started her medical school. So, like, literally our relationship is like we've never really dated. We have 2 sons who are 7 and 6 now. Our little guy just turned 6. In 2018, I'm like, yeah, let's just go out once a week without our kids. And again, I have a high following on social media. So I just started posting these photos or whatever, and people really started liking it. And then, the last week of the year, the Chicago Tribune's top columnist, she won a Pulitzer Prize, Mary Schmeich, did a column on, she went to dinner with us and she did our story or whatever. And what happens with that is what happens with my clients a lot of times is one outlet does it and then, you know, somebody else sees it and does their own version. And so the Today Show did their own on NBC, did their own version of it. And we were on multiple other television shows live kind of thing. So there was no intent to get publicity out of that at all. But it wound up getting an amazing amount of publicity. And to this day, like you just did now, people bring it up and it's led to lots of intros, lots of business, lots of great opportunities. And that's what, you know, I try to tell my clients too, and people, you know, who are on my network, I'm like, this media, these links, they never go away. And it just, it continues to build and build and build and build. And it helps you with your validity and credibility. And just shows in that case that you're an actual human being and you like to do cool things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the things I do when I start looking at a prospector is I go to their website and I look at their blogs. I try to find their articles and things like that. And
absolutely.
It just never ceases to amaze me. You know, they'll go on. This actually happened yesterday. I was on a site, somebody I was talking to, and they haven't published a blog since 2017.
So it's still there. Last thing published 2017.
Yeah. and I see that all the time. And it's,
I do too.
Yeah. And it's just crazy to me that sometimes what I think is just common sense that just eludes people when it comes to, you know, putting their best foot forward and in their face of their organization. And this other one I was on, I was clicking on the links and it just kept coming back to the same page. It was, you know, nothing was working. Everything was broken. And I was trying to explain to them, how do you tell me how great your company is?
Right.
And yet I go to your website and I can't find any greatness. Your copy doesn't reflect anything you just told me. So it's nuts.
So I think you make a really good point, because on these websites, there's two things that I look at every single time. Certainly before I talk to someone or just in general, if I'm looking them up, it's the main page, obviously, and then the about section, like what's the company's history or who are the people in charge and, you know, where did they go to college? Like, so if the about section isn't good and or interesting, that is not a good sign.
So tell me, so give me a couple examples. I like stories. You're a storyteller. Tell me a few stories of your clients and kind of the process that led to the success and placements and those kinds of things.
Man, there's so many. So in what I do, I don't typically ask for ROI, because like people who ask about ROI, it's like, that's not why you necessarily do this. You do this for validity and credibility. However, for some of these contests, I do ask for that. Some of these like PR contest. So, Golden Trumpets, which was the top like PR award in the Midwest or whatever. So for that, I don't want to say their names per se, cause the award submissions are confidential, but, they were both, CPAs/financial advisors and got them in, you know, multiple financial magazines, TV, radio, newspapers, that kind of thing, magazine, niche publications. And there, one of them had mentioned to me he was getting between 3 and 5 new clients, and he filled this out like a year after our campaign had ended. He was getting 3 to 5 new clients every week because of it, because people would constantly see, you know, this Forbes article, or like you were saying earlier, they were looking this person up and then, you know, they're seeing all these great articles about him. So he was averaging between 5 and 10,000 a week in new business just from that. And that was a small project campaign where it was one story and I, you know, pitch it for 3 months. So that's a typical kind of success story where it's like, you know, these clients, they gain all this validity and credibility, not just in the short term, but in the long term too. They're attracting all this new business because people are constantly seeing them in the news, and these links again never go anywhere.
Do you find that you're doing mostly about the people within an organization versus the product or the company itself?
So this is the rule I live by most of the time. Nobody cares about what you do. They care about who you are. But if they care about who you are, they will care about what you do. So that's the biggest, mistake, in my opinion, that a traditional press release, which those are the two worst words together in the English language for me, but the typical press releases are totally useless to anything human related at all. I mean, it's like written like by a robot who has, you know, who's just doing a job as opposed to actually finding out what is interesting about this person. So there's obviously some exceptions to that. Like I work with a lot of clients who are doing some amazing cutting edge technology and things that are, you know, certainly helping with COVID and stuff. So obviously those stories are more about the product or tech or adaptations that the clients are doing. But for the most part, it's more important to talk about who the person is behind the company and make the journalist and public care about who that person is, and then they'll care about what they do.
What inspires you?
It's a good question. Boy, I'll tell you, I love my family very, very much. I'm a really, really good dad and an above average husband, sometimes average. So sometimes pretty good. My wife usually grades me like a 7 out of 10. She gave me an 8 on Father's Day. I was really happy with that.
There you go.
But,
nice.
You know, sometimes in the 2 or 3. So it averages out to like a 5 or 6. But so very passionate about my family. My father died when I was 13. He was 61 when I was born. So like, he was a World War II soldier and stuff. And like, so he never really treated me like a kid. It was more like, you know, we watched like rated R movies and stuff when I was a kid. So like with my kids, I'm the same kind of way. We're more like best friends and stuff than father, son. So I'm very passionate about that. And because my dad died when I was so young, I really like spending a ton of time with my kids, and we're very wild. And I'm like the oldest brother. My wife says she has 3 sons, not 2. So that's one, obviously. Two is like, if I didn't have to sleep and or raise a family or whatever, I could literally talk to amazing people around the world 24/7. And that's what I do most of my day. It's really fascinating to see how that has evolved. And that was the number one thing I learned from my book, is that it's not a PR firm. It's this incubator of geniuses around the world. And I'm in all these global entrepreneurial groups where I've really evolved how my brain thinks, not only in a business aspect, but in a life aspect and giving and caring aspect as well. So being around really amazing people, not nickel and dime thinkers, not cost, scarcity mindset people, but investment abundance mindset people, that's what inspires me. Just constantly being around people like that, because there's, you know, such a few percentage of the population and even entrepreneurs think like that. But when I find people like that, it's like I'm addicted to them. It's like a drug, intoxicating. And then those people just keep introducing me to more and more people like that.
We are coming down last 3, 4, 5 minutes. So I want to talk a little bit about the book. I believe there's 30 lessons in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you talk about a couple, 2 or 3 for the audience to hopefully get inspired to go buy it.
Sure. So it's called Epic Business. It's on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Books a Million. It's going to be in Target and Walmart and all those. So that's been exciting to see how that's evolved. Again, the number one thing I've learned is do what you like to do and what you're good at. A couple other things, and since I help people start businesses all the time now, because so many people help me, when you start a business, it really takes 2 full years to figure things out. Like if you're expecting, you know, you start a business and then 6 months in, it's going to like really start to click, even if you're making, you know, more money than you ever thought you could. It really does, based on my experience and the experience of so many other folks I've talked to, it really does take 2 full years to figure out your process and the people you like talking to and all that kind of stuff. So that's a good one. And then the other one is only work with people that look at things as investments, not costs. And that's why I'm so direct and adamant about, if someone says, what do you cost or charge? Those people go away very quickly, because I just, they're toxic. They're just toxic for multiple reasons. And so, you know, maybe you can't do that at first when you start a business. You have to, you know, weed out some bad apples. But once you do that and you only start working with the best people, it really just makes all the difference in the world.
So last question then is, you know, my show, the concept of my show is about business and about giving business advice.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could speak to those entrepreneurs, small businesses, middle market companies, which is my audience, what 2 or 3 suggestions would you give them about their journey as entrepreneurs?
Yeah. So again, I'm very direct. if you cannot handle ludicrously high anxiety, stress, every really high level entrepreneur I've ever met has been depressed at some point or another, including myself. Like, this is not the life for you. And if you can't handle that, then, you know, I would not recommend continuing in this field. That said, the best entrepreneurs I know have failed so many times that failure is really a good thing. And it's the best thing that can happen to you. And, you know, strongly encourage everyone to learn from their failures. Every great success I've had in my life has followed an incredibly bad failure, from meeting my wife to starting my business. It's all not necessarily a rebound, but like almost a reaction or a pivot up from a massive, either one failure or an enormous amount of failures. So, I mean, I can't tell you how many people a day talk about what's going on with their businesses or, you know, the problems they're facing or things that they have to overcome. And I always have a two-word response to it. It's entrepreneur life. This is just entrepreneur life. So that's what it is. That's what you've agreed to do by entering this world. So it also has provided such an amazing amount of joy and freedom and flexibility and, again, doing what I want to do and what I'm good at. And I just really love my life. And I'm very thankful that my job salary was cut in half February 10th, 2017. It turns out that was one of the best days of my life.
That's a great way to look at it. I mean, you're absolutely right. This is, I like to say it's, this road has a lot of ups and downs and twists and turns. And while you were talking, my mind was flashing to a roller coaster sitting on that very top of that big drop. Because you just never know what's going to happen. I mean, we saw a lot of those reactions right at the beginning of COVID. And I've spent a lot of time talking to clients and prospects about what they should not have done and what they should have done. And I've seen it before and I've written about it. And and you're right. It is an interesting road. And I talk about, you know, in between my successes are a lot of, I call them dead bodies or a litter on the side of the road.
It just, yes.
Yeah, it just happens. I mean, and to your point, my very first entrepreneurship was, I was 23 and I wanted to start a film company. And my partners were about 45 and 50. And they convinced me that we could bring Hollywood to Orange County, California. And what did I know? I agreed with them and spent all my money. And we actually did pretty well for a while. But unfortunately, all our work was in Hollywood, not in Orange County, California. So we didn't quite get to the model. And then, you know, they lost interest in, you know, the rest is history, in and out in 8 months. But man, what an education in 8 months. It was unbelievable.
Entrepreneur life, man.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, Justin, thank you so much. This has been really, really interesting. I love the perspective. I've talked to and have worked with lots of PR folks, and I love the approach and kind of the commitment you have in working with people that just have a vision and are not concerned about the ROI or the dollar. It's so hard. I get that all the time still. It's like, I need to measure this. I said, but what are you measuring? I said, I simply, for example, in my podcast, I have a conversion of how many people visit the site. And I don't make any money, right? And so you have to decide what's important to you, not necessarily there's a dollar for dollar investment and a return or two for one kind of thing.
That's why I don't work with anyone like that.
Yeah, it's crazy. So again, thank you so much. Why don't you tell the audience how they can contact you, connect with you, buy your book, all that good stuff.
Sure. Just look me up on social media, especially on LinkedIn. I use it as a commercial for other people. So it's Justin Breen, B as in boy, R-E-E-N as in no. And then my company is BrepikLLC.com. B as in boy, R-E-P as in pony, I-C as in cobra, LLC.com, BrepikLLC.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for joining us at the cafe today. You can find out more about me, view my blogs, watch my videos and all that good stuff at theponzigroup.com or certainly connect with me on LinkedIn. And if your business is ready for growth and you need a CMO, but you're not quite ready for a full-time person yet, connect with me. I'd welcome the opportunity to explore the benefits of using a CMO. And lastly, please subscribe to this show. And if you're already a subscriber, I encourage you to invite others so they can benefit from the great content like we had here today with Justin. You can also go to thebusinessgrowthcafe.com or subscribe on any major podcast platform. And also go to Justin's LinkedIn. You can see the book. He was flashing it up right there for me. And And I encourage everyone to go ahead and buy that. So join me next week at the Business Growth Cafe. Justin, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.